You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Have you been eyeing that vacation property in your favorite international destination? Or are you interested in diversifying and tapping into the benefits of a national economy that isn't yours? This is the episode for you. I'll walk you through the main steps you need to take to invest internationally and get through some of those confusing first barriers that there are.
Welcome to the Real Escape Investing Podcast, where we guide you to escape the constraints of time, geography, and finance through real estate. And now, here's your host, Terry Schauer.
Thanks for joining me today on this episode that's actually airing on this podcast, the Real Escape Investing Podcast, and on Dustin Heiner's Master Passive Income Podcast. So you get to realize that this content is actually going out to two different places because it's just so interesting. And what I have for you today is a kind of crash course on some of those steps that you need to take when you're considering investing internationally. And if that's, you know, that vacation property in your favorite spot that maybe you want to go to once in a while, and then you want to do some short-term rental when you're not there, or if it's that you're kind of more excited about some of the economic opportunities that might exist in a country that's not yours, or maybe getting some of your eggs out of your national basket in case some wobble were to come and, affect the economy that you're investing in negatively, this is really something that at a certain point it comes time to consider. And, you know, before we get too far into the subject matter here, this is an advanced investing strategy. And by far the most simple thing to do is to really stay within the borders of your own country, because as far as tax and financing and even just the knowledge curve that you're going to have as far as rental laws go, it's really much simpler to invest at home, or at least to invest, you know, in within your local country's boundaries. But at a certain point, it begins to make sense to consider moving some of your eggs out of your own home basket. And so if you want to know how to do that safely, I have all kinds of great content for you lined up in this episode. So before we get too far into that, I also just want to share, you know, my impressions or my experience of how this happened for me. So I actually started my professional property management career working in France, in Marseille, and I worked for 3 years there as a property manager while I was at the same time also kickboxing semi-pro. So that's another story for another time. But that really gave me some insight into how to map another country's ecosystem, and then also how to understand the way to translate that into what you're going to have to do as a foreign investor or as someone who has a tax existence in more than one nation. And, you know, when I was going through this process in France, part of it was to understand as a Canadian how you have to declare worldwide income. It was also to understand that the financing conditions are like completely different. And, you know, Europe versus North America, it's actually more difficult. The financing rules there are more stringent. So it's actually harder to get a mortgage there. And the amount that you're going to be able to borrow is less, which then interestingly also, you know, affects the way that the market works there, in that if you do have access to that capital, you do have access to debt, maybe you're in your own home country, there's kind of an interesting arbitrage to be able to set up there, because it might be that the interest rates or the borrowing laws in your country are that much easier, and maybe you can borrow at home and then close on a property abroad with the power of that debt leverage that maybe that economy does not allow you to have. But we'll get into that a little bit further. And then the other thing is that, you know, currently as I'm doing more speaking in the United States and as a Canadian, because that market is just south of us and the debt options that exist in the US, their credit markets are just that much freer than ours are as Canadians. It means that with the vastness of the US economy, the vastness of their housing market, and also, you know, the access to debt and to be able to leverage more, it means that us as Canadians, there's an opportunity there just south of the border that if we are able to understand the ecosystem and then understand, obviously, in the US, so like mapping that is one whole part of this. But then the other part is to understand that as a Canadian, your taxation and the access to financing that you're going to have is maybe a little bit different than, you know, what somebody would have in the United States. And so mapping that is really a key part of what you need to do in order to become a international investor. So let's get into the weeds. Let's get into a more of a deeper dive onto some of those key aspects that you need to do to understand how to set yourself up to successfully invest internationally, be it understanding the taxation perspective, understanding maybe the rental ecosystem and how the market might be different from yours, and then understanding how debt functions in that foreign country that you are covering. So without further ado, what are some of the reasons you might want to invest outside of your home country? And what are the steps that you need to do to make sure that that investment is going to go well for you? The first thing that you, or the most typical reason why people choose to invest outside their home market, is because they're looking at buying vacation property in that favorite vacation spot of theirs that may be occupied part of the year and then maybe do short-term rentals for the rest of the time. That's probably the most common request that I see, the most common motivation that I see for people who want to invest internationally. Now, there's another reason to invest internationally, and this I wish were on more people's radars, because between nations, there are very different ecosystems. There are different political ecosystems, different economic ecosystems, and that as a result, the real estate markets that exist and that have their ups and downs in different nations, they are not necessarily correlated with one another. And to give you an example of why this is just so powerful and what the interesting things can be here, is that every American investor, even every investor in the world really, is aware that the United States had a major event in 2008 when your banks were over leveraged because they'd been doing too much high risk lending and your real estate market basically imploded. The reason why I'm talking in the second person is because I'm a Canadian. I invest mostly in Canada, and I watched 2008 from the sidelines because in my country, we basically did not have that kind of an event happen because our banking system is just that much more regulated. And because of the way our banking system functions, our real estate market really did not have that massive balloon that you guys had in the States before 2008. And so we really did not have that event north of the border. Now, what you should hear also, if you're on the Canadian side of the border, is that there is a vastly different ecosystem operating in the United States, largely because of the debt options that are available to the American investor. And we will get into that a little bit further on in the episode. But what I'm trying to say with this sort of preamble is that because the international ecosystems between nation states are different in terms of what happens politically and what happens economically because of debt and banking, it means that you're able to hedge your local market and perhaps diversify, perhaps sit out the next market correction or economic event that's going to happen in your local country by investing internationally. And a great parallel here would be any financial advisor, when they're talking to you about how to safely distribute your stock portfolio, they're going to tell you, you should have some high-risk stocks that are yielding a certain percentage. You should have some treasury bills or some bonds or some kind of like low-risk stock that's going to have a very stable yield. And you should probably also be looking at diversifying internationally with your stock holdings, because different markets, for example, you know, Asian markets or African markets or European markets do not follow the same curves as the North American market. And so once you get to a certain level, it just makes sense to do some of that diversification to make sure that you're not putting all of your eggs in the same national basket. And throughout the podcast, you're going to see how some of these, you know, differences between different markets just become clearer when you have a sense of what's happening in the different nations around the world that have interesting real estate markets. But let's get into the specifics of what you have to do if you're coveting that property that's across a border somewhere. So the very first step that you need to take is to understand the legal framework that operates in that other market. So very simply, in Canada, most of us who own residential property begin investing in our personal names just because we are not concerned with lawsuits in the same way that Americans are. So typically, Americans, when they own property, the first thing that they do is they go out and start an LLC, and then they place that property within the LLC. Now, if you are investing internationally, you need to be aware that the legal structures that are appropriate for you locally might not be appropriate wherever it is that you're trying to invest. And the best way to research this is to find an attorney, ideally one who operates in both countries and can sort of translate for you. And there are definitely those cross-border attorneys that operate with major markets. So if you're a Canadian looking to invest in the United States, there will be Canadian, you know, cross-border attorneys. If you're in the US looking to invest in Europe or in Canada or perhaps in Latin America, there will be attorneys who are used to operating in those markets and who can sort of do the translation for you and explain that, okay, you're used to investing through an LLC. Well, if you want to map that onto what it makes sense to do in Canada, this is what you might want to do. And very simply, you know, as I've gone through this process with investing across the border in the United States, one of the first thing that popped up to me when I started having that conversation with that cross-border attorney is they explained to me that basically in Canada, we don't have an equivalent structure to the LLC. And so us as Canadians, our options basically are either you can invest in your personal name in the US, which comes with a certain amount of legal risk because you're exposed to personal lawsuits in that case. You can invest through an LLC, but then the problem with the LLC is that it triggers a double taxation situation because the Canadian government does not recognize the LLC as a structure. And so therefore, as a Canadian, you would end up paying tax to the IRS through the LLC, and then paying your tax to the Canadian government as if you had paid no tax on site in the US because they don't recognize that thing as a legitimate vehicle for owning property, or they don't recognize it as a legitimate taxation structure. The other alternative is to own property through a C Corp in the US. And so that for Canadians is an option. Whereas if you're an American looking at investing in Canada, basically your options are a personal name or a Canadian holding company. Now, I'll put a little bit of a sidebar here, and that is that if you're not aware, the Canadian government in the last year placed a foreign buyer's ban, which makes it impossible for foreign citizens to purchase property in Canada in their personal name, residential property. So what does this mean? It means that you cannot own from a single family home to a triplex. You cannot own that type of property in Canada, acquire it in your personal name currently. There are workarounds, be it in terms of creating a holding company or else just buying larger buildings. That is still on the table for foreign buyers. But what you should read between the lines there is that if the Canadian government came out with a law that prevents foreign buyers from buying up assets in Canada, why might there be this large amount of foreign capital that's looking to come in and control assets in Canada? Well, very simply, it's because the Canadian economy, because of our very tight banking regulations, historically, we've had an extremely stable real estate market. And this means that, you know, also with the immigration pressures that are happening currently in Canada, we have just a massive amount of immigration happening. Actually, anecdotally, we have as much immigration coming into Canada as you do in the United States, whereas the Canadian population is the size of California. So we basically have like 10 times per capita immigration coming into Canada. And our government is very concerned about the value of Canadian assets is going to go up in the next while. And so they've placed this foreign buyers ban to prevent some of that foreign capital from easily coming into our market. So if the government is taking this step, it should be clear that there are some opportunities, you know, in our market for foreign people to hedge some of that political and economic instability that might exist in their own home markets. And if you're looking at like kind of playing that game of seeing what are the opportunities internationally for your investment capital, I mean, those are very interesting questions, because for an American looking to place money somewhere that allow them to avoid the next political and banking hiccup, Canada's probably a great place. If you're a Canadian looking at maybe making some more aggressive returns, because our banking ecosystem here and our down payment structure and everything is that much more conservative, it means that there are countries like the US in which, you know, lending is much more fast and loose. And it means that you as an investor are able to leverage yourself more highly than you would be if you were investing locally. And so that's also something to consider. The sidebar has become so interesting that I just feel called to mention also the interest environment, because I'm sure you're aware different countries have different interest rates. And so currently at the time of recording this, you know, your interest rates in the US are relatively high, perhaps around 7%. Us in Canada, a typical residential mortgage now is currently, you know, between 4 to 5%, depending on if that's an insured mortgage. If you look at Europe, your rates go even lower. And the other market I follow is France. And their lending rates are now, you know, between 3.5% to 4% on residential property. And so if you're able to, you know, get your leverage to borrow money at a substantially lower rate of interest in a different market, it might mean that the returns or the way in which that market is operating is like really quite different from what's happening, you know, in your local home market at the moment. And, you know, when I talk to a lot of my American colleagues, it seems quite difficult to do deals that make sense in the US right now. That's actually not the case up in Canada, because our interest rates are closer to something that's balanced. So around 5%, not 7%, which is a little on the high end. And our market is actually really going quite strong because of all that immigration that's happening. And because we have just in Canada have not been keeping pace with our construction industry. So we really have a lack of housing, and that's making, you know, the projections of the next 5 years of how our property markets are going to go up really quite interesting. The next step that you need to take on your journey as far as investing internationally is to lock down your financing. We discussed already to begin with understanding the legal frameworks that you need when you invest internationally. Then we moved on to taxation. And now the third point on your step-by-step process is to lock down the financing. And I mean, generally, when investing in real estate, this is a best practice anyway. It's very difficult to define your project and the scope, the size, the budget, to zero in on the type of property that you want to close on if you don't have your financing set up. And this is the exact same situation for investing internationally, except there is an additional complexity because foreign nationals very often have specific types of mortgages that they can qualify for. And depending on the type of asset you're looking at, there are going to be rules. So let's have, you know, just a quick dive into this so that you can understand. So if you were purchasing locally, probably you would just, you know, call up, you know, a bank that works in the market that you're looking at, or a mortgage broker, and they would qualify you, you know, with your social security number, or run a credit check in sort of a conventional way. And like everybody around you would sort of be able to tell you how to go about getting financing. So that process is just a little bit less opaque. Now, a little bit more opaque when you're investing internationally. So what you're going to need to do is to get in touch with two sorts of people. So that would be either banks, so conventional banks that work with foreign nationals, or else a mortgage broker who is able to direct you, you know, in the right direction as far as qualifying for a specific kind of mortgage. And I'll just get a little bit more fine-grained so you can see, you know, how you would do this. For me, when I was mapping how to invest in the US, what I did is I identified some other Canadian investors who invest. Actually, Florida was my first market of choice because a lot of Canadians invest in Florida. And so my first port of call was to talk to an investor who was living in Canada and had done something similar to me. And what he was able to tell me is that there are some banks in Florida that actually, divisions of Canadian banks, that work specifically with Canadians who are looking to invest in that market. And so presumably, if you're an American looking to invest internationally, those same types of institutions will exist, and they will be able to take your income. If you're looking at, you know, doing a residential purchase, they will be able to look at your income, your tax returns, and all that information in your home country. So they will be familiar with that documentation, and then they will be able to use that to qualify you for a mortgage, understanding that you're a foreign national. And to just like be a little bit more specific, when I was looking at investing in France, this process was actually quite similar. There are, you know, two French banks that work with Canadians who are looking at owning property in France, and they're able to look at your Canadian tax return and your Canadian income, and then tell you what kind of financing you would qualify for. And that will be the down payment that you will need to put is probably different because you're foreign. And the interest rate that those institutions will charge you is probably also a little bit different, just because as a foreign national, your file is considered to be higher risk. In the US, this process was exactly the same. When I looked at, you know, purchasing property in the States, it was the exact same thing. There were certain Canadian institutions that have branches that work with Canadian residents looking at buying in the US. So that's kind of the first option when you're looking at financing, is to see, to identify those banks or those mortgage lenders that will work with foreign nationals. And the best way to zero in on those people is to talk to other investors who have done similar projects. So let's say American nationals who have invested in the market you're looking at, or whatever that would be for wherever your home market is. The next option, and this is a little bit more advanced, let's say, is to look for partners. And, you know, one of the things that I discovered when I looked at investing in the US is that there are certain kind of mortgages, so a debt service ratio mortgage, for example, on residential property, that a Canadian investor who does not have a social security number cannot get that type of mortgage when they're investing in the US. And so what this meant when I did my research is that in order to be able to qualify for that kind of mortgage, which actually for an investor is kind of more interesting long term, I would need to have an American partner And so that then started like a different kind of search where I'm looking at identifying potential joint venture partner who might be able to help me qualify for financing on those American properties that I was looking at. If you transpose this onto kind of the reverse situation, when looking at, you're an American looking, for example, at investing in Canada, what this would look like is that, you know, basically, if you're looking at just a conventional residential mortgage here as a foreign national, you would end up having to put something like 35% down. So that's like really kind of a large amount. And for us, debt service mortgages really start only on $6 and more. And so, and anyone can qualify for those. So it doesn't matter that you're a foreign national or not, you would be able to purchase with that kind of a debt service ratio, except that you're automatically in the multifamily space. So just to kind of tie a bow on this, the next thing that you need to lock down when you're looking at investing internationally is that financing piece. And, you know, like I stated kind of at the beginning of this section, that means that you have to be talking to people who have experience working cross-border and are going to understand the subtleties of what it means to invest, you know, across border and what kind of institutions are going to help you out with that. The other alternative is obviously to go with some sort of private money lending or else perhaps to do your purchase cash. But again, in that case, you really need to look at the numbers and make sure that they make sense from an investment point of view, because if you're foregoing the leverage aspect of real estate investing, it might be that it just makes the whole deal that much less interesting, because if you're not able to borrow, that means that whatever return that you would make will be divided by the full price of the property. And that actually might disqualify it from being interesting. And, you know, just interestingly enough, this is kind of what happened when I started, you know, digging in a little bit more to what it meant to be investing in France as a Canadian investor. And what came up was that the down payment amount that I would have to put down was just so big that it made the return on that not interesting. And so even though the French interest rates were remarkably lower than the Canadian ones, because of the amount of capital I had to deploy, it just, the numbers didn't make sense from the type of return that I was looking for. And in the end, I ended up not, you know, doing the project that I was looking at doing at that particular time in Marseille, just because, you know, when I looked at underwriting it, the returns just didn't make sense. And I think this is kind of a nice way to bookend the financing section, because when you're doing your underwriting, this financing piece is just so crucial to making sure that you're getting the kind of returns that you want. And like, there's really a lot of parameters that you have to look at. And it's not because, you know, maybe the interest rates across the border look more interesting to you than what might happen in your home market. It's also about how you're going to deploy that capital. And before we move on to the next thing, that also brings me to something important, which is exchange rate. And I'm sure you're going to be aware that if you're operating, you know, within the US or within Canada, when you begin to look across borders, the effect of exchange rates and then the movement of those exchange rates can have really huge impact on the projects that you're looking at doing. And right now, historically for Americans, it's a great time to invest internationally in terms of your exchange rate, because I'm not sure if, you know, how much of public discourse this is, but American interest rates right now are high. The effect of those interest rates on the value of your currency means that the American dollar is actually historically very strong. So, you know, for me as a Canadian, when I look at our exchange rate, it's like, I always joke that the Canadian dollar is worth 25 cents now compared to the American dollar. But without that exaggeration, it's actually true that historically for an American who wants to invest outside of the US, now is really a great time because the American dollar is exceptionally strong. And so your buying power in terms of those foreign assets, be it something that you're looking at, you know, in Canada, in Europe, or in Latin America, it's just to be aware that if economically the US is doing well and your interest rates are high, perhaps that makes investing at home challenging at the moment. But what it's going to do is it's going to mean that your American dollars will just buy you that much more real estate somewhere else. And so it might actually be time to consider making a move somewhere because your dollars will just go further internationally than they are at home. The next thing to consider is the rental environment in the market that you're looking at investing at. And, you know, obviously people who are in the US, you're aware that between different states, so for example, your residential tenancy laws in Texas or Florida will be extremely different from what they might be in California or New York. And this is certainly something that when you're busy mapping that rental market in wherever it is that you're looking at investing, keeping an eye on those tenancy laws are really crucial. So I always like to joke, you know, that basically, like, if you're looking at Canada, we're imagine California and then just take one huge step left of there. So our rent control laws and our residential tenancy laws are extremely tenant friendly. That is the same case with most places in Europe, aside from maybe the United Kingdom. But if you're looking at investing, you know, in France or Spain or Germany, those kind of countries are extremely tenant friendly. And so your ability to raise the rents in a way that you would be used to maybe in the United States is different. You also need to be aware that with vacation property, and this will be similar in the US, the laws as far as doing short-term rentals in certain foreign cities, the governments are really quite negative towards that Airbnb influence, because there's this worry about housing affordability. And increasingly in bigger, you know, famous tourist cities, now governments are just sort of outlawing any new short-term rentals. So like, that's definitely an ecosystem that you want to delve into. And the way that you might go about learning about this is to, and this will be our next section anyway, is to how to build a power team in that market that you're looking at. But it would be to talk to property managers, or else, I mean, we live in the era of podcasts. And so really the best thing that you can do is to find one or two of those podcasts that talk about investing in that specific market that you're looking at, and then really see what the concerns are that are voiced on those shows. And believe me, if there are challenges to the rental environment and specific tenancy laws that you need to know about, any show that is specialized in a specific local market that's for investors who invest in that market, that is definitely going to be one of the things that's on the agenda. And so by tuning into that and learning some of that information, you're going to be able to really be aware of the tenancy laws in that particular market. And kind of an interesting sidebar here is that one of the things I realized, so most of the markets that I invest in are extremely rent controlled. So like I mentioned, Canada, like our rent control is just really, really strong. Same thing in France. And that the opportunities in those rent control markets are actually different from the ones that where a landlord can immediately adjust the rents to market value. And what happens is that if you are in touch with a local operator who knows how to kind of wiggle around some of those rent control laws and adjust rents to market, the optimization capital, the return on a building optimized that you can do is really interesting. And, you know, for those of us who invest in Canada and those rent controlled markets, the ability to optimize some of those rents and work with the rent control laws to, you know, have those building values go up and then find a way to up the rents, if you're able to collaborate with an operator who knows how to do that, you can really make a very interesting return, not necessarily on cash flow, but on that optimized piece. So that's also kind of something that you want to understand, the type of market that you're looking at. Is it a cash flow market where you're going to be able to adjust your rents to market immediately and then try to get an asset that is cash flowing immediately? Or is your strategy going to be some kind of buy and then optimize perhaps with a local partner, or by leveraging some kind of knowledge or some kind of strategy that maybe other people in that market are not aware of? So it's to really strategize on what is your business model going to be, because given the fact that it's across a border, it might have to be a different strategy from the one that you're used to applying in whatever your practice is in your home market. Then the last section that I want, or the last thing that I wanted to talk about, is really that how to map a market which you're not used to working in. And I mean, I'm kind of a bit old school with this. Dustin might have a bit of a different perspective on it, but for me, I really need to feel a place. And so when I was doing some of that exercise of mapping investments across borders or in secondary markets, or markets that are away from my home market, the way I would do that is to just, you know, get on a flight or else get in the car, go and stay there for 2 or 3 days. And, you know, my husband and I have a joke that, you know, when we were mapping one of those markets, like I had no idea where we were going. So I booked us into like this super sketchy hotel in a super sketchy part of town. But it ended up being a good experience, because one of the things that you do when you're doing that like recon on a market is, it's one thing, you know, to talk to realtors and to talk to property managers. But if you're able to really go and feel the streets and feel what a specific area looks like, it's going to give you that much more data. And so my recommendation of the step-by-step way to map a market is go there physically, get a hotel, plan to stay there for 3 or 4 days to get to know the area you're looking at investing in. And during that time period, obviously you want to be walking outside, having a look around. Does the neighborhood feel like it's up and coming? Does it feel like it's kind of down on its heel? Is that a kind of area that you would feel good about placing money in? And then go and meet some of the professionals to try to build that power team of people, because presumably, if you're looking at investing internationally, you're probably not going to be living in that area in order to be able to manage that property and like go there on a regular basis. So you're going to need to have a good property manager who's going to be able to take that asset and work with it according to their business model. So again, if you're planning on doing short-term rentals, you need to really locate and interview a great concierge who's going to run that short-term rental for you. If you're looking at doing long-term rentals, you're going to need a property manager who is really specialized in that kind of market and then understand how it operates in that particular location that you're looking at. So in that 3 to 4 day period where you're going to visit the market, make sure that you've set up at least 3 appointments with property managers, 3 appointments with realtors, and then just ask them those questions. Like pull out, I mean, we don't have paper maps anymore, but get them to show you on Google, these city blocks are a good idea, these city blocks are a bad idea, this is an area that's gentrifying, this is an area that's already gentrified. And, you know, for me, I just had super candid conversations with the property managers, especially where I said, look, if you had money, if you had to invest somewhere in your city, where would you invest? And if I'm looking to make money optimizing, if I'm looking to make money on cash flow, where would you place those dollars? Where would you, what kind of asset would you pick? And then the answers to that were just so valuable. And when I went back home, like, you know, all of the offers that I made were from far away, but it was with the understanding and with enough visibility on that market to know that when I was bidding on something, I felt good about the fact that I was going to own that property one day and that I had the sound decision making. And this then brings me sort of to the last piece, which is how you go about doing your underwriting. Because that's something that can also be super challenging when you don't necessarily understand the market and all of the expenses. So if you've been doing your underwriting, let's say in your home market, and maybe your realtor, your property manager, you yourself have mapped out some of those expenses and then how much they should be. So let's say your property taxes or your maintenance fees or your property management, you know, ratios of how much your property manager is going to charge you. Be aware that when you're looking across a border, some of those expenses might be different. Like there might be additional expenses. There might be expenses that you do not have to account for. And some of the percentages of what those expenses should look like might be radically different. So, you know, to give you an example with property taxes, you know, Canada is one of the most taxed places. And so for us, the tax proportion of what we look at just eats up a huge amount of that operating income. Whereas when I'm doing my underwriting, let's say I'm looking at, you know, at a property in France or at a property in the US, those yearly property taxes are really a much smaller percentage of what I'm going to be looking at. Another thing that can vary vastly is insurance. So if you're looking at, you know, insurance in a kind of a risky area like Florida or like the Tornado Alley or like some kind of place where there are natural disasters or, you know, earthquake insurance, if you're looking at California or Vancouver, like specific kinds of insurance concerns might really make the cost very different of your underwriting, or they might even make it to the point where it might not make sense to invest in those markets. And I think, you know, increasingly with the flood zones and various things, there are places in the world that are going to become increasingly uninsurable. And so to make sure that, you know, you're taking the time to speak to a damage insurance broker or like a realtor that is familiar with those concerns about insurance in particular areas is going to be a very important piece in terms of how you map the market and make sure that when you're doing your underwriting, that those insurance expenses are actually the correct ones, because it's not because you've insured some sort of similar thing in a different market that insurance expense is going to be correct. And if you're off by a huge margin of error, well, then your return on investment calculations are going to be really off. So insurance is another thing. And then the last one is property management, which can be extremely different. And just to give you another kind of ballpark for us in the market that I operate in Quebec in Canada, our property management fees usually vary between 5% and 7%. And that, for example, if you look south of the border, like we're rather cheap when it comes to property management fees. And so you want to make sure that when you're doing your underwriting and you're building in that expense category, that whatever it is that you're estimating is realistic for your particular market. And the best way to do that is to run your underwriting figures by a property manager or another investor who is active in that market. And this might be perhaps like the place where I want to leave this, you know, little crash course on investing internationally, which is that networking is going to be so key to making this project work for you, because you have to realize that your visibility as somebody who is looking outside of your national ecosystem, you're investing away from home, you're kind of compiling different challenges that make this complex. So one is that you're looking away from where you normally live. And so that means that you have the distance aspect, but you also have that cross-border aspect, which means that financing, taxation, legal structure, all of those things are going to have to be tweaked to make sure that you're well protected and you're making sound decisions in that different ecosystem. And the best way to triangulate all of those things and get free information on how you're structuring your affairs is to talk to other people who are in your situation. And this is where that like networking just becomes so key. And that's really something that I've done every time that, you know, I've mapped how to invest internationally, is to talk to somebody who is in my situation. So a Canadian resident from the point of view of taxes, who is looking at investing in France or who's looking at investing in the US, and then have them explain to me exactly how they structured things. How do they hold those buildings? Are they in LLCs? Are they in their personal name? Are they in a C corp? What kind of an impact did that have on their professional fees when tax time comes around? Because it's not simply because you choose the correct structure legally that you're not going to have huge accounting fees that you're going to have to add on top of whatever you're doing, because cross-border taxation is complicated. And the people who are competent to do those sort of calculations usually have a pretty high hourly rate. And so you definitely need to figure, you need to put those accounting fees into perspective as well when you're doing, you know, your underwriting calculations, because they won't be the same as what you would be doing in your home market. And again, like the extent to which you're able to surround yourself and get advice from people who are further along that path of international investing in the specific market that you're looking at from the country, your country of origin, the more successful and the more streamlined that's going to be. And like, also, it's just going to be easier that every time you have a question like that, I'd be like, look, okay, how did you handle that like Florida flood insurance problem? Or, you know, do you have a good cross-border accountant who can advise me on this specific situation? And maybe you worked with two or three. Who's the cheapest one? Who's the one who gave you the best advice? What mistakes should I not make? And some of those conversations, really, if you ignore absolutely everything that I have said, you know, in this podcast episode, the thing that will save you is to go and have those conversations with people who have done similar projects, because they're going to have crossed all of those bridges before you, and they're going to be able to tell you exactly where the shortcuts and pitfalls are.
Thank you for listening to the Real Escape Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Terry Schauer. If you find that this show has been useful to you, if you've enjoyed the content, if it's done anything to move the needle for you, please go ahead and share it with one person who you think could profit from listening to it. Until next time, real estate fans.